Happy Easter. Yeah. I know it takes a lot to get here, even by 10:30, and particularly for the folks who are here at 9 o'clock to save your spaces. I know that it is a big deal to get here, and so I hope you have full stomachs, because this liturgy is going to go a while, and if you were here at 9, you probably skipped breakfast. This is a big day, and of course a wonderful delight for the Cathedral of St. Mark to be able to host not only those folks who are here as regulars, the longtime benefactors and lovers of St. Mark's Cathedral, but also the extended family of this cathedral, who we know to be diverse and spread all over the country, and in fact all around the world. And we know that Easter is often a homecoming. So if that is true for you in whatever way, please know that we're delighted to have you back under the roof of this one household here at St. Mark's. It's great to celebrate with you and to see so many faces and to see reunions happening all around the room. It is the case, and I know this well because I've been on both sides of this fence, that there are mixed motivations for being here. There are folks who are here because that's what you do on Easter, right? You go to church on Easter because that's what you do. There are folks who are here early because you go to brunch late. There are folks here who are late because you do Easter egg baskets and stuff early or sleep in. There are folks who are here grudgingly because some beloved, significant person in your life told you that they were excited to come and celebrate Easter with you at the cathedral. And so you did it. And I can see their heads ducking right now. You know what? God accommodates us and gets us here however we need to get here. And it all counts. I also know that there are folks among us for whom church is perhaps a new thing. Folks for whom the faith that we proclaim is a foreign thing, if not a completely offensive thing. And what I'm going to try to do is say a quick word that is good for everybody, hopefully is particularly helpful for that crowd. And failing that, I will just make sure that when the air is out of the room, I just shut her down and sit down. I'll just do my best to know when that time has come. So of the million things that tyrannize a preacher during Holy Week, preparing for Easter Sunday, in terms of themes and in terms of who said what about Easter and what are the particular grudges that people bring to the occasion, I have come down with a particular something that speaks to me, and I hope that it's particularly helpful for some of you. And the thing that speaks to me is just getting back to the basics of what it is that we think we're doing here. As a people gathered, right? Because you could be doing anything, right? I mean, it's not a great day out, but you could be doing anything. You could be going for a stroll in the rain. But you're here in a church hearing an incredible story that is so fantastical as to come off sometimes as just absurd. And yet you're here for a particular reason, because there's a magnetism to it. There's just an awe-inspiring magnetism to the story of this somebody who somehow defeated death. And somehow we're part of that. And we're supposed to figure out, each one of us, what difference does that story about ourselves make? Right? What difference does it make for me? What difference does it make for you? It will be different for each of us. And we're each here with that question, basically, so what? So what? Of the millions of narratives telling us who we are and why we're here in this world, so what about this particular story? Do we give it any bandwidth at all? And might we this year just give it a little bit more? We're here to retell the story, of course, to remind ourselves of that very first amazement, that very first experience of surprise and disorientation, even fear, even sadness at the empty tomb, and yet the deep, deep, profound joy at the unknowing, the joy at the message that something new has happened here in Jesus, something unexpected, So we retell the story, and we retell it all the time, but we retell it especially at Easter. And we retell it at Easter because Easter has historically been the time when new folks are brought into the body of the faithful. And so we go back to the basics. We did a whole vigil last night where we could have read 15 or so different stories and could have been here into the wee hours of the morning, but we picked a few of those, her beautiful music along with it, and one of those in particular is mandated. Now in the Episcopal Church, when something is mandated, you pay attention, because most of our rubrics say things like, you may do this, or you might do that. But when it says, you shall read this story, you know there's something essential to it. And the shall from last night's story was the story of the Exodus, which tells us that at the most basic level, at the universal level, the one story that binds each of us together and that binds us to what God's up to in the world is the story of Exodus. Exodus. Walking out. We are a people who are built and predisposed to walk out on captivity. Exodus. Walking out. The original narrative of the Exodus is the story of a people who are crying under the weight of oppression, various oppressions. And the story is of a God who hears them in the midst of that oppression, and a God who cares enough to do something about it. Not just a God who's listening in from afar, but a God who is active and who is present. A God who does something about it and who does incredible things to make this exodus happen. This is a God who cares about us in a real way. And this is the originating story of our people. This is the originating story of the gathering of all the tribes, those people who experienced something like captivity in the millions of ways that we experienced that, and we cried out to God for freedom. And we have a God who hears, we have a God who shows up, we have a God who acts, we have a God who cares about our freedom. Freedom for what? That is the answer today. God shows up because God cares about our freedom for the fullness of life. And any sort of tyranny that holds us captive to death is unacceptable to the God of life. God has come among us in Jesus to give us life and to give it to us abundantly, and anything that diminishes that is unacceptable to God. Right? It's unacceptable for us as individuals. It's unacceptable for us as faith communities. It is unacceptable for us as societies. We have a God who believes in life. Life to its fullest. God shows up. God lifts up. God delivers. And Exodus people, those who have walked out in open and active rebellion against the forces of death. And last night at the vigil, we incorporated four more wonderful little people who have no idea what they've gotten themselves into. Four wonderful little people who are now attached to this body of people who stand up anytime we see the forces of death present and active around us and say, enough is enough. We are here for life. We defend it vigorously. It looks like justice. It looks like kindness and compassion. That is the nature of this body that God has freed for something. That is us. That is why we're here, to retell that story and to recommit to be that people for God. Here's the trick. The downside of all this, as we know, I've got a fruit fly here who I think wants these. It's a peep fly. Thank you, Siri. Here's the problem. This all sounds fantastic, right? I mean, you rationalize yourself into it and you think, yeah, we're justice people, right? We're all for freedom. The problem is, and the fundamental narrative as people of faith, as human beings, the fundamental narrative is this. Captivity is compelling. We love captivity. We love it in so many ways. It is certain. It is predictable. We know some sense of right from wrong, right? Because somebody told us about it, right? The right thing is you get up in the morning, you go make some bricks for the Pharaoh. That's the fullness of your life, right? Captivity gives us some sense of stability. Captivity gives us some clear sense of who I am and who I'm not. The problem with that captivity is that it is usually our voices telling that about ourselves, right? It is rarely the voice of God calling us to perfect freedom and the fullness of life. But captivity, nonetheless, is where most of us spend our time. Captive to something that in some way exercises tyranny over us. That's where it's up to each of us to sort out every year we hear these stories, yet again, what is it for me now? What is that thing for me now that keeps me from saying yes to God in every way imaginable? What is it right now in my life that keeps me from living life to its fullest? What is it that exercises such tyranny over me that I cannot experience joy? I cannot experience hope? I don't have the bandwidth to love anybody. And so instead, we shrink in upon ourselves. We become defensive. We become possessive. Rather than functioning out of abundance, we function out of scarcity. And dare I say, if you're paying any attention to the political process right now, this is what's happening. These are competing narratives. It is happening around us right now. That's what the culture does. And here's the thing. We can have some compassion about it. You got to work at it sometimes. But at the very least, you can say, you know, being a human being is hard. It's hard to be in community. It's hard sometimes to know what the right way is to go. It's hard sometimes to love the other person who is so radically different from me. It's just hard to be together. We can at least have that much compassion. Christian people, however, have to keep coming back to this story because we are so consistently bombarded with the narrative of death. That just as folks were captive in Egypt, so too are we captive to an imperial narrative that tells us time and again that you can only hope for so much in life. That the images that God promises us of the abundant kingdom that's peaceable, where everyone has everything they need to live together in perfect harmony, those are so otherworldly that you may as well just give up on it. Our empire is telling us that on a regular basis. That is our Pharaoh. That is our Egypt. And we are being invited every single day, and certainly on Easter, to consider standing up and walking out on it. That's what we're called to be, is Exodus people. People ready to stand up, to say enough is enough, and to demand more. Perfect freedom, fullness of life. There's another trick here. Having been called from death to life, the question is then set before us in the gospel this morning, why would you ever look back? If you're called from death to life, why would you ever go back among the dead? Why do you look for the living among the dead? Wouldn't it be better just to save your own tail? Imagine that you're right with God and that all you have to do is just keep your head down, keep your nose clean, right? Maybe behave a little better during March Madness. Be nicer to some of your friends. Wouldn't it be enough just to do that? Just save your own tail. But the narrative here is this, that we are called just the same way the original Exodus people were called, not just to save our tails, but to become a body for God, through which God exercises God's call to those who remain in the tomb, whatever those tombs may be. we are fine. We don't have anything to worry about with the eternal state of our souls. God has done it. There's nothing you can do to add to that. So the question then is this: having been saved, having been made safe, having been incorporated into the life of God, will you say yes to participate in this pattern of what God does, which is, put as simply as possible, calling people from death to life? That is what God does. I've tried to understand Easter. I don't get it. But what I do understand is that what God does essentially is that God calls everybody out of their tombs, gives them an invitation to new life, gives them an opportunity to cling to a body that has meaning and purpose as lovers, people who have meaning and purpose, who are compassionate, who build societies that are just and right and good. That's what we're invited into. And we have friends, family, communities around us, and whole societies that are yet to say yes, who are still yet stuck in the tomb. Why do you go back seeking the living among the dead? Well, because that's what God does. And if we're God's people, that's what we do. Why do you look for the living among the dead? Well, because every day, every hour, that is where we encounter the risen one, who was and who is and who always shall be in the tomb, trampling down death by death and bestowing on those in the tomb life. Bestowing life. We are part of that. That is why you are here. That is the meaning and purpose of your life. And when we say yes to being Easter people, that's what we're saying yes to. Brothers and sisters, like those four young people last night, marked as Christ's own forever, incorporated into the body, made members of the movement, which is for life and against death, we are marked for this as well. Marked not as our own, but as Christ's own. Forever. Amen.